Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Scott Reich from Crime Talk, and we've got a full docket. First, a trial date is set for Chad Daybell. Will Lori Vallow have the same date? Second, Lori Loughlin goes to the big house, not the full house. Third, the Golden State Killer finally sentenced. Sixth, an Arizona cold case solved, and the stepfather's been charged. On our cold case, who is Jane Doe from Phoenix, Arizona? And finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day, and a recap of our contestants throughout the week so that you can pick a winner. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. Scott Reich of Crime Talk. First, if you haven't already done so, we'd ask that you hit that like button, hit that subscribe button as well, and as always, leave us a comment. Let us know about the cases that we talk about today. First on the docket, a trial date has been set for Chad Daybell. That's right, he had his arraignment. We put that video up. We can put a link for you below. Now, Chad Daybell is sitting in the jail dressed in a white shirt and a tie with his attorney, Mr. Pryor. As you've noticed, and I've called it out before, Mr. Means, Lori Vallow's attorney, has always brought her to court dressed out in jail garb. Mr. Pryor clearly taking the extra steps to make his client look like a human, regardless of the charges that he is currently facing. Now, the court was very thorough in their advisement. Normally, when the court asks, do you waive any further reading or advisement of the charges? And the attorney says, yes, we do. Well, the reason why the court asks that, because they don't want to do it. And as an attorney, you're expected to have gone over all the rights with the defendant, as well as the charges and possible penalties. And that's what Mr. Pryor did. But this particular judge then went through and advised of the general nature of all the charges and advised Mr. Daybell of all of his rights. So maybe the judge wants to be really thorough, or he's trying to get his 15 minutes of fame as well. Just a little surprised at that. Usually in arraignment, it takes longer to schedule court dates with the participants than it does to actually appear. Needless to say, Chad Daybell has a trial date scheduled for January 11th. Both the prosecutor and the defense believe that it will take 3 weeks for this case to be presented to the jury. There's also a pretrial conference set on December 10th at 10:30. Motions will be filed in this particular case to resolve any legal issues. I would also anticipate that the prosecutor will file a motion to join Chad Daybell and Lori Vallow's case at her arraignment, which takes place next week. It makes sense in terms of judicial economy to only have to try the case once versus multiple times. Unless there is some sort of inconsistent defense theory that the defense would have to articulate, I think the judge would be inclined to grant it. From what we can tell, both of these defendants did not make any statements upon arrest, nor have they made any statements pointing fingers at each other, so therefore there's a pretty good chance the judge will join the case. We will obviously continue to follow this case, as well as Lori Vallow's case, and any new developments that may come up on all the other investigations that are ongoing regarding all the untimely deaths of everyone apparently related to Chad and Lori, so that they could spend their lives happily together, relatively alone. We'll see how this plays out. Next on the docket, Lori Loughlin is going to the big house. I bet she wishes it was the full house. That's right. Lori Loughlin and her husband, who both lived, for lack of a better term, fairy tale lives, are both going to prison. They both stood before the court as convicted felons, and Lori Loughlin will go to prison for 2 months, and her husband, Mossimo Giannulli, will go for 5 months. The former Full House actress appeared to be rather choked up as she apologized to the court. She stated, quote, "I am truly, profoundly, and deeply sorry. I am ready to face the consequences and make amends," Ms. Laughlin told the court. She stated that she made an awful decision and she allowed herself to be swayed from her own moral compass. Now, Ms. Laughlin's attorney described her as somewhat of a bit player, and the prosecution agreed that her husband, Giannulli, was clearly more active, but that Ms. Laughlin was completely complicit. As you may recall, Ms. Laughlin and her husband agreed that fake athletic profiles would be made for their daughters so they could be recruited in the rowing team, a sport they did not participate in. Information also came out during the sentencing that steps were taken to hide these profiles from the high school counselors so that they would be able to cover up this plan to get their daughters into USC, to keep it hush hush. One of the daughters was even instructed how to do this, which clearly shows that everyone was involved. Both defendants appeared via video. Obviously, for the COVID-19, courts are taking limited court appearances. After statements and allocution were made by each of the defendants, the judge basically took a moment to scold them. The judge stated to Mr. Giannulli that this crime was motivated by hubris. He stated that you are informed, smart, successful businessmen, and it's not like you are stealing bread to feed your family. You had no excuse. The court noted that there was no loss to USC. However, there certainly was a loss to the overall educational system in this country. Needless to say, the positions that were reserved for Laughlin's kids should have gone to somebody who actually deserved them and who had actually earned those spots. The judge had some words for Ms. Laughlin as well, and stated, "Here you are, an admired, successful actor with a long-lasting marriage, two healthy, resilient children, more money than you could possibly need, a fairy tale life, and yet you stand before me a convicted felon." The judge stated that it's an inexplicable desire to grasp even more. Now, as the defense noted, their clients both sat there humbled. And I have said this before, ladies and gentlemen, there are two types of people in the world, those that are humble and those that are about to be. No matter how big or powerful you think you become, you will be humbled by someone or something. So always be humble. This is also a classic example of pigs get fat, hogs get slaughtered. These kids probably could have gone to just about any school that they wanted, and I'm sure somebody would have taken a donation to get these kids in. But they wanted to go to USC, and they hadn't met the standard. This type of situation completely is amiss and opposite of what we expect. Everything in life should be a meritocracy, the best, regardless of who your parents are, how much money they have. The only thing that matters is who is best and most deserving, a true meritocracy. And when both USC, the coaches, and the parents allow this to take place, you really have to wonder, because let's face it, ladies and gentlemen, this is not the first time that this has happened. And obviously, this scheme that was introduced to the Laughlins was clearly something that somebody had tried before and they were going to do it again. And as we know, there have been some 50 suspects that were charged in this Varsity Blues investigation, were wealthy parents who cheated college applications and entrance exams to get their kids into these elite schools. Well, maybe they'd have to just realize that their kids maybe aren't as elite as they think they may be. Next on the docket, that's right, the Golden State Killer is finally going to be sentenced. Now, the Golden State Killer, whose real name is Joseph James DeAngelo, was sentenced Friday to life without the possibility of parole for a horrifying crime spree that stretched from 1970 through the 80s. He pled guilty in June to murdering Claude Snelling, Katie Magoor, Brian Magoor, Deborah Alexandra Manning, Robert Offerman, Sherry Domingo, Gregory Sanchez, Charlene Smith, Layman Smith, Patricia Harrington, Keith Harrington, Manuela Wiethen, and Janelle Cruz. Now, D'Angelo only pled guilty to 13 counts of murder as well as kidnapping charges because there were more than 50 rapes that were committed and more than 120 burglaries, but they could not be charged because the statute of limitations had run. However, the court had reserved some 3 days for victims and survivors, even of the uncharged crimes, to be given the opportunity to speak at the sentencing hearing, which began on Tuesday. Now, Mr. D'Angelo's MO was basically to ambush the victims. If there was more than one victim, he would put the dishes, that's right, dishes, on one of their backs as a so-called alarm system. He gave them an ultimatum: move and you die. It wasn't uncommon for him to obviously target a couple or a family, and he would then put the dishes on the man's back, and then he would sexually assault the woman. A number of survivors reported getting harassing phone calls after the times of the crime. Now, Mr. D'Angelo is obviously old and is going to die in prison, and it probably won't be that long, but needless to say, he is going where he belongs. One of the victims stated in their sentencing statement, "One quarter of me, being Christian, wants to say, I forgive you. But three quarters says, rotten hell." And I think that pretty much sums it up. Next on the docket, a cold case in Arizona has been solved. That's right. 19 years after then 17-year-old Alyssa Turney vanished, never to be seen again, authorities in Arizona have charged her stepfather with her presumed murder. On Thursday, the Maricopa County Attorney's Office charged Michael Turney with a single count of felony second-degree murder. Now, the allegations against the now 72-year-old suspect have not been officially outlined. We've seen no affidavit for the arrest warrant, so it's unclear exactly what new evidence was developed to cause this case to be charged now. Now, Alyssa was last seen on May 17th in 2001 and is obviously believed to be deceased. Her body has never been found. On the day of her disappearance, Alyssa stopped by her boyfriend's woodworking class at Paradise Valley High School in Phoenix, telling him that her stepfather was coming to take her out of school early that day. The missing teen grew up in a blended family. Her mother remarried when she was 3, and her stepfather adopted her. Her mother died of cancer before Alyssa actually vanished. Apparently, some new information was developed out of a case that Michael Turney had in 2008. It appears that Mr. Turney, what happened was that investigators visited Michael Turney soon after the disappearance, and they found explosives inside his Phoenix residence. Their paper reports authorities recovered some 26 pipe bombs and 3 incendiary devices from the home and alleged Turney was planning to blow up a union hall. He pled guilty to unlawful possession of unregistered destructive devices and was sentenced in 2010 to serve a maximum of 10 years in federal prison. Well, he was ultimately released in 2017. So it will be interesting to see whether there was some new DNA evidence, whether the body was discovered, or whether perhaps a jailhouse informant provided new information on Mr. Turney. Clearly, it will be an interesting case to continue to follow. Now, ladies and gentlemen, sometimes you just don't know with whom you are dealing with. Sometimes people put on a pretty good act and you're not sure whether to believe them. Now, particularly these days for women, if you are dating someone or going to be meeting somebody online and meeting them, you should check somebody out. I would strongly recommend that you use a background subscription service to do a background check. You're going to get more information than you would possibly ever get from just doing a Google search. That's right. When you sign up and you run a background search, which will be done anonymously, you will receive a report, and that report will include information on any emails that are associated with this particular individual, their social media, phone numbers, criminal history, property records, civil judgments, sex offender registration, as well as marital records. That's often important to see if somebody's in fact divorced. So go to crimetalksearch.com and please sign up for this report. These reports could not only help from a bad date, it could potentially save your life. Go to Crime Talk Search. You'll be glad you did. Next on the docket, our cold case, Jane Doe. Let's take a look at this. On November 21st, 2004, a woman was found in the street at 15th and Broadway in Phoenix, Arizona, minutes after being struck and killed by a car that left the scene. That's obviously tragic enough. Well, the deceased woman had no identification, but all they can say is that she was wearing green sweatpants and a flowered t-shirt. The forensic pathologist who conducted the autopsy reported that the woman was white, Caucasian, or possibly Hispanic, 40 to 50 years old, stood approximately 5 feet 4 inches tall, and was about 158 pounds with short black hair and brown eyes. Despite the fact that the woman's face was recognizable, she still remains unidentified. Now, the Phoenix Police Department has reached out to the public for assistance in locating the family of a woman killed in this apparent hit and run. DNA analysis has suggested that the woman may have family in Cabillo, Aguascalientes, Mexico. If anyone may have information regarding this Jane Doe, please contact the Phoenix Police Department and ask for Detective Stuart Summershoe at 602-261-8065. Someone, somewhere, knows information regarding this Jane Doe. Let's help her family have some peace. All right, ladies and gentlemen, the moment that you all have been waiting for. That's right, our dumb criminal contestant of the week. Now, this individual and his girlfriend are obviously very dumb criminals, and we appreciate the fact that they have a serious drug issue. But when you try to sell your child, you take a huge leap from dumb criminal to really horrible human being. That's right. A Kentucky man has copped to trying to sell his girlfriend's child for $2,500 outside a convenience store. Now, someone called 911 about 1:20 a.m. on Sunday to report that this male suspect approached two individuals and offered to sell them a four-year-old child. The witnesses also were able to provide the Kentucky State Police with the license plate of the suspected white Nissan, which led them to a home about 5 miles away. Inside the home, they found the child's mother, Gertrude Hinson, and the boyfriend, Harry Day. Now, during questioning, Day and Hinson reportedly admitted to maybe using a little meth earlier in the day, and a search of the residence turned up some meth and some drug paraphernalia. Well, additionally, there were visible track marks that were still bleeding when they saw Mr. Day. And engaging in some good police work and the fact that Mr. Day had stated that he had driven back to the residence, the police immediately arrested him based upon a field sobriety test and charged him with 2 counts of DUI. He was also charged with meth possession, endangering the welfare of a child, and possession of drug paraphernalia. When Mr. Day appeared in court, he pled guilty to a felony trafficking charge. That's right, human trafficking charge, and was sentenced to 360 days in custody. The DUI charge was ultimately dropped. Now, obviously, Mr. Day and Miss Hinson have some serious drug issues. Hopefully, while they're in custody, they can get the sobriety that they need, and hopefully the child will get some love that it truly needs. Only thing positive for Mr. Day is the fact that he actually accepted responsibility and will hopefully get some help. So, obviously, Mr. Day, he's our dumb criminal contestant of the week, and it's borderline between dumb criminal and horrible human being, but he doesn't quite get there because of his drug issue. But Let's face it, ladies and gentlemen, drugs are horrible, horrible things. Don't do them. I've never had a client or anyone I've ever known that said, man, those were the best years of my life when they finally get sober. It's simply not the case. Just easier, don't do them. Well, a quick recap of our dumb criminal contestants of the week. Yes, that's right. On Monday, we had Mr. Kelvin Barnes. He is the gentleman who tried to jump through the drive-through window because he was upset about his fries, apparently. Then we have Ms. Downs. That's right, the urinating first mate who urinated from the opened hatch while her husband was sleeping in their boat. Next, we have Gwendolyn Braswell, who backed her car into a Home Depot to pick up the items she staged to steal and then drove away. Now, let's not forget Mr. Anthony Vulo, who was so upset that somebody put a political sign in front of his sign that instead of just moving his sign over and over again, that's right, he assaulted the improper sign placer. Ladies and gentlemen, tough competition once again. Every week I wonder, how can we have such good contestants, but they keep coming. Leave us a comment below. Let us know what you think. Who should be our dumb criminal contestant of the day? Thanks for watching. Have a great weekend.